Hey everybody, it's Mary Lou Tyler coming to you actually video today, which is unusual. Which means I have to get dressed and all that good stuff. I was telling Peter, my guest, that my office looked like a tornado had hit, but luckily it looks pretty good now for all of you, I hope. Today's guest is Peter Lang. He is CEO and co-founder of a company called Yuhuru. And the reason why I think you're going to love this particular podcast is because Peter and I have fundamentally different views on some of the items within setting up an agency and also how the teams work together. And I'm very interested in how he's implemented his solution. I want him to share with you what he's done, because a lot of times we get stuck in this, oh my gosh, I need to hire full-time employees for the sales development role or for the marketing rep role, whatever it is that you're looking for, whether it's inbound, outbound referral. But we also think co-location, that they should be together because that allows them to learn faster, to play off each other, to role play, and to bring that energy up that we need in the business development area that I think we need. Peter is going to talk about why that may not be the case. So Peter, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Mary Lou, for having me. It's going to be fun to share how we built a distributed and predictable sales process that is counterintuitive to everything you believe.
Exactly. So without further ado, how did you pull this off? I mean, we're taking fundamental things that I believe in, for example, like co-location, but you're saying, no, it's trending differently now, and you have a lot to say about that. So why don't you tell us first about why you got started with this type of offering, and why agency versus in-house? I mean, what was the selling point in your mind to go ahead and invest your time, energy, effort, expertise, money into doing this type of offering for clients?
Yeah, great question. So we built an international digital marketing agency, and so I use the word international as a key part of that. All of our clients are located all over the world. They're distributed. And so when we thought about building a team and scaling a team, both from a client services standpoint, but also from a sales team standpoint, it just made sense to have the interaction that we have with our accounts, our clients, that's distributed and remote, be the same for us internally. Never mind the overhead advantage that comes with having a distributed and remote team. And so when we started looking at the benefits and looking at what we could achieve with it, it was a no-brainer. The world is trending towards remote telecommunication was in question, you know, many decades ago. And now it's showing that you can be productive. You can work from your home office. You can work from anywhere in the world. You can accommodate and accomplish many things organizationally that you've been tasked with and brought into a company. And we've applied that into our sales organization.
So share with us the typical onboarding process for a client. And I know you mentioned before we got live today that this applies to whether you're selling a widget, this applies to whether you have a high technology product. Is that correct? It fits multiple industries. So walk us through the onboarding of a client. What would we need to give to you in order to be able to hit the ground running, be productive, and start, you know, ramping up towards our numbers?
It's helpful. I'll describe the sales process, and that will help identify the transference of knowledge that goes on at each stage of that.
Perfect.
So we believe that we have to identify good fit. And this is something you talk about in your book, deals with the ideal persona. And so we have a prospect fit matrix. We've determined a select criteria for company and personal, the individual that we're trying to speak to. That really and clearly identifies if we can help them. Now, what's been most important is in order for us to do that, we need to know their situation. But oftentimes, when I get emails from SaaS technology companies that say, hey, Peter Lang, I'd like to get your, you know, can I talk about my demo? My fun response is, I don't give a damn about your demo.
Yeah.
So when we don't care about the thing that you're talking about, you don't have conceptual commitment. Mm-hmm. So our entire sales process was built to get conceptual commitment before advancing any level of value. Now, I'll get specific in this from an outbound perspective, because it's one of my favorite. Even though we focus on inbound as an agency, the outbound side of it's probably the most interesting for you and kind of helps me combat this distributed model.
Okay, so great.
Outbound as a whole, I believe, and we've created a process around this, where you have to get prospects to raise your hand, something that know, you've recognized through your work with Aaron Ross, something that you preach in your books. And so we thought, okay, the agency model, where it's really commoditized to services, and agencies don't typically do their own service very well, how can we get people to raise their hand? Because we don't want to compete when they're looking for an agency. That's not a good space to be in with any prospect when they're in evaluation of another provider. Because then you have a lot of, you know, what feels to be bravado in the sales process to put you ahead of the competition. So we ask for conceptual commitment, which is, if we provide you with value upfront with no obligation, would you spend a few minutes to review? And that's the first yes we're trying to achieve. Pretty simple. Mm-hmm. If they say yes, and this can be positioned for a long sales cycle, ours is 45 days. But if you can position this value offering, get them to raise their hand saying, yes, the thing that you're providing, I would find valuable enough to dedicate a few minutes to review it, then you're able to say, okay, let me prepare something. This is a targeted account, trendy language that everyone hears about today. So I'll prepare something specifically tailored for you so I can provide you a value. That's our first interaction point from outbound and inbound. Now, what's most important is the objective of that is not to have a call. So there's another sin of outbound sales, depending on how you describe your pipeline process, which we're not trying to drive a call. We're trying to get acknowledgement of the pain point based on the value we've presented. So It's conceptual commitment and then acknowledgement of pain. So if that's the genesis of any conversation we have, it takes a lot of effort from a sales rep to create that. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about having an office environment where sales teams are ringing bells, getting motivated by deals closing and that kind of enthusiasm, it doesn't give or harness the real focus of a sales rep. Sales reps need to, in our sales process to deliver value, have to be really focused on the individual they're talking to.
Okay.
So we found it's been very helpful for them to be remote, them to work from a home office or from another location where their primary focus is set in delivering that value, not in the energy around closing deals. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So this whole mechanism is an acknowledgement of effort. We get per rep around 10 raises of someone's hands per week. Mm-hmm. So from our deal values go from anywhere, if we look at just LTV, it's $500,000. So we're at 45-day consultative MRR, retained service, high valued, a lot of education in the sales process, and we're able to get 10 people to raise their hands, not inbound. These are outbound prospects who've acknowledged our outreach. So when we create that model and we say, okay, now we've given our sales reps the ability to implement this themselves, they get to control their own environment, be their own, you know, describe their own destiny and make it happen, then they don't need that. Again, they don't need the reinforcement of the highs and lows that being in an office together really stimulates, right? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when there's so much failure in the sales organization, just because of low conversion rates, the energy of a sales team can kind of build each other up to keep pushing through and have that drive. But right. We've built a positive success and predictable exercise through outbound sales. You don't need that motivation, that uplifting environment.
Okay, so let's stop there. You mentioned of the account-based methodology, for lack of a better term. And my question to you there is, I'm remote. I have my accounts that I've been assigned. Is that how it works? Or is it, I go in and see what's available and pull what I want? Does it really matter? How does the selection of accounts work? And are you in this value theme trying to get these distributed reps to focus on certain segments of the market? Or are they experts in multiple persona types? I'm a little bit confused there, how that would work, and do they switch their languaging based on who it is they're contacting?
Yeah, let's go through the specifics. It'll be helpful.
Okay.
So I talked about a prospect fit matrix, mm-hmm. very common language in sales.
Yep.
The key thing for us was identifying typical issues. So there's a difference between prospect fit and typical issues, and typical issues allow us to tailor messaging and tailor the communication necessary to gain someone's attention. So if I know that you are working from a home office, I already know the typical issues you face sitting at your computer day to day. So if I know the environment, I can already identify a way to communicate with you. So how we do that is we've defined by technology. For us, it's marketing automation. there's a level of sophistication of our prospect that's needed to hire or be qualified to hire someone like us. Mm-hmm. Probably have something similar. A lot of organizations have this. If you're going after CISOs, there's a level of sophistication that's required for them to understand the value that you're providing.
Right.
So we need to qualify that value. And for us, it's indicators of certain technology platforms, the very common way of creating databases. Mm-hmm. So you can take HubSpot, Marketo as great examples. So if a company of a certain revenue size has technology or marketing automation, we're able to generate a list based upon regions, qualify that or filter that based upon executive positions. And we use a great tool, the founder of Robots, if you haven't heard of it, Greg.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He got my attention with an email referencing you and Aaron Ross.
Wow.
He said, I see you follow Aaron Ross and Mary Lou Tyler on Twitter. Our solution makes it easier to practice predictable prospecting.
Hmm.
So he understood that. And when we had our initial conversations, it just sparked me of saying, okay, he understood who he was talking to based on who I was following. So based on some of that, you know, social selling enrichment data. And so we use that same approach. And so the rep is able to say, okay, I'm going to email, because we use outbound email. It's really effective. We don't believe in cold calling. We don't want to talk to anybody who doesn't want to talk to us. Sales reps don't enjoy it. People just typically don't enjoy it. And so we are always in the position of they want to have a discussion with us for us to provide them with value. So it's a win-win engagement throughout the sales process, and our reps' morale is higher because of it.
Right. Right.
So the other most important aspect of that is, okay, we've now identified a list that we're going to email based off of a company criteria within verticals. So we do know that typical issues of individuals with certain marketing automation technologies within certain verticals have similar issues in the implementation of their marketing and sales organizations.
Okay. So
then we're able to craft that messaging based on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you do segment as much as possible to get the conversation be more succinct and aligned with the person or the persona, as we call it.
Correct.
Okay. Very good. All right. That was my first question. Another question I have about that is, let's say I am working with a pathologist and they're looking at a microscope-based solution, a digital microscope versus a scanner. Depending on the sophistication of the institution, there are certain disqualifiers that I want to ask up front or I want to know up front that are not going to be in some database somewhere specifically. Yes. So how do you add value and yet disqualify at the same time? Because top of funnel, we're working with a lot more records, and our goal is to try to get them to the meaningful conversations that you're talking about. But we have to go through some sort of process where technology still is not enriching the data enough for us to know whether we have all of the, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed so that we can have a more meaningful conversation and focus in on that value. We still need to know certain things before we can start that conversation. How does that fit into this when the databases are still not quite ready to give us all the information that we need in order to know the fork in the road before we make that phone call or before we send that email?
Yeah, great question. So, this is a fundamental aspect of what we implement, and it can implement and be worked with others. So you're trying to get someone's attention. The most important factor from our vantage point is to create a database of individuals who fit the prospect criteria. Mm-hmm. That's the most important. Whether or not they're actively looking to purchase is another step, right?
Right.
But at the end of the day, we're trying to create a database of known contacts that are in organizations and in positions of authority, so decision makers, who fit our criteria, whether or not they're in a purchase decision today.
Correct.
So that's the most important piece. So when we talk about how do we uncover the information in our sales process to identify what stage of the buyer's journey they're in, whether or not we're trying to gather that, I'll run through how we do it and show how that can be mirrored with other organizations.
Okay.
So the first one is we've sent an offer to provide value up front. We deliver on that offer. We send it with no obligation to have a phone call with us. We give you the thing we said we're going to give you. And it's not an ebook that was already written. It wasn't something that was already crafted. We have systemized it, so it's efficient to produce, and it's less time intensive. And we've automated the ability to do that through, you know, business development reps focused on it. You guys preach this where a sales rep shouldn't be doing prospecting, right? Try to remove them from the repetition work.
Right.
We did the same and have them focus on high value, which is okay, providing that value and taking that call. So they jump on that next call. We label it a connect call, many do. And on that call, it's based on the understanding of the value we've already delivered. So our objective is to make sure the prospect we're sitting in front of understands the thing we gave them. And in that, we say, we will also have additional follow-up questions to help us determine or bridge the gap between the things we've identified, which are surface level. We don't have access to your accounts. We don't know what's going on in your organization, and more systemic issues that these typical issues usually indicate.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
And so now they want to know.
It's giving upfront a more generic, even though it is personalized, because you're saying with systematically personalized or data driven, as I like to call it, but there is a uniqueness to it that is given up front. And then after they're starting to engage, then you gently bring them through what I would call a disqualification. Or are we, you know, in my world, we have, are we really a good fit? Is this a waste of my time? So I'm trying to get in my head, is the waste of my time call preceding the gift or...
So here's the interesting thing. Through our targeting, we've already identified that the company and the contacts typically fit based off of success. So we're not wasting our time talking with people who are in companies that don't typically hire agencies. So we know we're already having an initial conversation with a higher probability of success than, than the factor would be otherwise. So this is why the targeting is so important, because if you're just spamming and then going aggressively to anyone who will breathe into the microphone when you hop on a phone with them, you're going to have that qualification criteria be more rigid. We don't.
So we know. If the data is available, it's not always available. That's the problem. So we get the total addressable market, which is what you're talking about. I mean, predictable revenue was like the market. And now we said, no, we got a segment and now it's the total addressable market. But we've even taken it further to say, what's the total serviceable market? Yeah. Sometimes there's not enough data points to help us go from the total addressable market to the total serviceable market. So we've got to do some level of disqualification still.
And we do that through the touch point that we're providing value. So just by thing that we're sending where they raise their hand for acknowledgement, they're also indicating that they have that type of problem
that
within
thing.
Their organization.
Yeah, that thing is something that they're interested in.
You have to get conceptual commitment at each stage. So progressive yes is the way they sign it. So the fact that they said yes to our initial offer and who we sent it to, our feedback loops of how we're going to effectively communicate throughout the sales process.
Got it. Okay.
So if you get I'll use this one as a good example. If you get a chief revenue officer who's concerned with inbound sales funnels, basically how their sales team is receiving marketing qualified leads and the qualification criteria for that progression to SQL in action, that's a lot different than hitting a marketing director who's concerned with the performance of their eBooks and their content marketing.
Right.
And so based on the first interaction point, we're able to qualify the pain point before we even have the initial call. So this is what's really important. We try to only have conversations with almost pre-screened, because it's not qualified, we haven't spoken with them, but pre-screened prospects who were confident that there's an opportunity. Now, it's our job to identify fit, as you like to say. We use the same terminology. But our next step of the sales process helps us do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do a business assessment as a requirement.
Okay. Okay. Business assessment is upfront.
Upfront. So another thing that other companies charge for, I firmly believe that if you want to have a competitive edge, you got to give away the thing that other people are charging for.
Right.
If you really understand the value you bring to them, and for us, it's not telling you and teaching you what the problem is and how to solve it, it's solving it for you. So there's not an objection from our standpoint to tell you everything you need to know about the problem you need to solve, because that's not why you hire us. And we have a clear understanding of our delivery and our value to our prospects. That helps us be able to craft that message.
Okay.
So this is a requirement. We strongly do not care. If you think you know what it is that you have as a problem and you're hiring an agency for, it's not that we don't believe you. No, we don't believe you. The strong statement is you're not qualified to hire us.
Right.
Oftentimes. It could be bandwidth issues. It could be experience issues. It's our responsibility. And Jay Abraham always talked about the fiduciary responsibility of a company to guide you through this process. And we believe that fully.
Yeah.
So we require a business assessment. And then in the gathering of that, it's a non-disclosure agreement. We gather all the intelligence and we have a completed business assessment. Our probability of close goes up to 75%.
Wow. In the world of what is the number now? It's depressing. I think it's between 10 and 20% close rates on average for the industry now. It's just pathetic.
Yeah. It's because you're really not motivating. Now, I want to be very clear. We do not accept everyone. Mm-hmm. So we've defined as a part of us, we recommend other organizations do the same. If you incentivize your sales reps purely for closing deals and not filtering those deals based on quality, like them really understanding how that needs to be a priority for them, then you're going to have unsuccessful conversions. You're going to have customers who are unhappy with the service they're providing or the product they purchased. And that's going to dilute the brand value overall. So, and it makes the sales process more tedious. Convincing someone who really isn't a great fit and trying to find fit. I mean, Ian Altman talks about the framework of same side selling, and you should be on the same side as your prospect when trying to figure out if they're going to be a good fit to move forward. And so when you take that approach, again, your conversion rate is going to be much higher because you've really vetted the process. So we don't always move people to a business assessment. We clearly say, you know what, based on the Connect call, we're going to leave you better than we found you. We've given you upfront value. Feel free to leave us a review that the engagements you have or me as the rep, leave me a comment on LinkedIn, but we're not a great fit to help you.
Right.
So we promote that type of positive energy out there, and that always comes back to enhance everything that we're doing.
It's so important. And I think in the long run, even back when predictable revenue was written, the predictable revenue formula talked about high lifetime value, high revenue, high likelihood of closing, and then high referral. By definition, they're loyal. So that helps build those other two channels of inbound and referral. It's not all about outreach. And we preached that for a long time. And somewhere along the line, it got to this crazy thing, I think because of email, where we just decided it's okay to spam people. But now GDPR is sort of reeling us back in saying, no, you can't just email people. So I'm curious, you said you worked all over the world. Does this model ebb and flow based on the requirements of the country and GDPR? I mean, how does that work now where our lists are going to get really tiny?
Yeah. So we look at the prospect universe, right? Mm-hmm. So the available universe that we have to prospect from or to source leads. And we looked at how that information is available to us. Number one is you don't use a U.S. company to do your prospecting lists. To be more mindful to the legalities or the legal restrictions in outbound sales, if you're doing anything for list building, use a European company. Use one that has a legal environment that's already restrictive.
Right.
And that default applies to the U.S. So our company that we use is based in Poland. And so they have a real strong view of European regulation that is evident through the tool, even though we're using it in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and target. And then we also centralize. So, I mean, ideally, even for our more sophisticated offering, we're still restricted to Europe, Australia, U.S., and Canada. It's just with the currencies and level of sophistication of our offering, those are the markets that respond the best.
Right.
So to make it easy, that's the recommendation. You got to use a company that is already embedded in it to where their standard procedures don't have you questioning your tactic.
Okay. So at what point in the pipeline does the agency disengage, or do you take it all the way to close for your client base?
We take it all the way to close. So this is in-house, inside sales. And so what we've built is I have it off screen, so I'm going to look away, but I can give you how many steps it takes to close, the date range, and the specific.
Let's do it. We're a numbers people who are on this podcast, so.
Okay. So I'll give you the most important aspects, and this is what, whenever we ask a company how standardized their operating procedures are from a marketing and sales organization, and they don't have these specifics, it's very hard for them to have the data, the performance data, to make insightful decisions. So we always say, you have to know this information if you want to improve it, first of all. Right? You have to weigh yourself before you try to lose some weight.
Yeah.
So I'm going to run you through it.
Okay. That'd be great.
Assuming we have the first call, so the Connect calls from an individual who's either come to us, they have a problem, or they've raised their hand. We then do a business assessment. And on that assessment, we gather business intelligence, not directly tied to our service offering.
Okay.
If you only ask questions that are one tier away or one degree away from your offering, you don't really care about the company. Mm-hmm. So we get all the business intelligence necessary for us to make insightful decisions as if we were, because we're an outsourced marketing department, essentially, as if we were an employee. We need to know what's important to the business, or at least important to the decision makers around us. So we get that. That call from connect to exploratory, where we go over the business assessment with them and highlight the areas that are a concern and areas that probably is an area of focus for us to help them, is about a week. So it takes about 7 days from that completion, so the connect call to the completion of their business assessment to the next call. Pretty mm-hmm. straightforward. And they want this, right? They've actively engaged. We're putting hurdles in front of them, which is the conceptual commitment. By accepting our initial offer is a yes. By showing up on the first call is a yes. By completing our business assessment, it's a yes. You're seeing a progression of commitment, demonstrated by our prospects, which is increasing the probability of close. Mm-hmm. The next step of that, once it's been, we then have to do our due diligence. Like in financial advisors, I would not tell you how to invest your money without looking at your accounts.
Right.
So we've created a diagnostic process, which is an internal one. We do complementary, what other companies charge for. And so we've also systemized that through standard operating procedures that identify a lot of those typical issues and criteria to complete those diagnostics. And then from there, we hop on a call to review our findings, like the doctor is giving you a prescription, mm-hmm. and we say, this is our prescription. It's pretty straightforward. You've gotten them all the way to this point. You've now shown evidence that you can help them, but our objective is not a client conversion in the diagnostic. It's called a confidence rating. Our team needs to be greater than 90% confident we can achieve the desired results shared with us through our business assessment and supported by the evidence in our diagnostic to move forward. If you're not, do not close the deal.
Yeah, right.
That typically goes into another week. Each of these, we try to give a week, we call them a sprint, because we do operate sales in our business organizations off of the Scrum rituals, and mm-hmm. we have sales and client services operating Scrum. So we try to do these at a sprint by sprint basis.
Okay. So in a adding value way, you typically go through the same process that I'm thinking most people that understand predictable revenue go through. And first you're determining, is this a waste of my time? But you do it in a way that you're segmenting the database so that your probability of having richer records exists before you start this process. And then you're looking for some high-level disqualification. We call the AWAF call. Are we a fit? Is it a good fit for us? Shall we continue? And then working it all the way through to, should we work together? But you're adding value for these steps, where I'm more of looking at my feelings about working with the prospect, saying, is this going to be a high probability account that'll close with high lifetime value and high revenue potential for the company? So you've done it in a way that's very relationship oriented. Shoulder to shoulder came to my mind when you were talking about it, because we are working hand to hand, shoulder to shoulder with our prospects so that they understand if it doesn't end up that we take them as a client, they understand the why and they know where they need to go. They have the blueprint now of what they need to do should they want this type of offering in the future.
My favorite statement is, I can give you the playbook, but you want to hire my players.
Right. Yeah.
You, at the end of the day, I can tell you exactly how to solve your problem. But there's a reason why people watch a lot of weight loss videos and a lot of exercise programs. They don't want to do the work. So right. We're very aware of that behavior within our prospects to feel like they can do it, be motivated, want to learn everything they can, and then right. be told that you don't have to.
Yeah.
You hire us and we're going to do this for you. Right. And it changes it to be a more emotional transaction, which is the key. Mm-hmm. Right? They have to feel that you're on their side and they have to right. believe it. This isn't fake. We're not saying this because it's a good tactic to implement in our sales organizations for us to be effective. If you're not genuine in these interactions, you will be unsuccessful.
Yeah. No, it's so much healthier way to work.
It's just happier.
Increases healthier, happier.
Tie this to the distributed environment. It's a lot easier to motivate people when the sales process is inherently built to create value and be enjoyable rather than be negative. It is true. If you've identified a targeted universe of prospects and you want to aggressively go after it with no care to the health and mindset and effects to your sales organizations, because you're trying to drive for some, you know, investor-backed objective, then yeah, it's very difficult to hire these people remote because they're going to need your embrace. They're going to need culture to stay motivated, and you're going to have a churn rate of, you know, 12, 24 months pretty easily. But if you create an environment that's pleasurable for both parties, a win-win, then people can work anywhere and be successful with it. And they really enjoy what it is they do every day.
Wow, this has been great. So we're running out of time here. I would love for people to know where to contact you. And just so you know, Peter, I'll create a page on my website that they know to come to download anything you would like and get your contact information. But in the meantime, if they're driving along saying, I want to know more about Peter, how do we reach you? What's the best way for us to get a hold of you?
So the easiest way is go to yuhuranetwork.com, take a look at our site. We practice what we preach. We have an entire consultative guide that was based off of our call recordings, transcribed with insightful direction and information. We have a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. So I'm open, peter@yuhuranetwork.com. I'll put my email out there in the world. My biggest ask is if you email or reach out, have it be specific. Have it demonstrate an area of weakness that I can provide guidance in. And that's the most productive way.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time. Everybody, I think this is a great way for us to really look at as we're going into 2019 now. We're recording this in November of 2018. It's a good way for us to look at the balance of in-house versus outsourcing, but also co-location versus distributed, and get an understanding of the benefits that are coming before us. We're getting a younger workforce. They're used to more freedom than what we old timers were used to. And the community aspect is in their DNA in a lot of respects, you know, so they want to be able to engage with their fellow people. And we have the tools to do that now. So there is no, before it was, you know, I don't want you to be out there in the middle of nowhere and I can't get a hold of you. I can't see you. I can't know what you're doing. We have full accountability no matter where we are in the world, and the ability to pick where you want to live and perform the work you want to perform with the value that Peter's been talking about is a win-win for everybody. Thanks again, Peter, for being on the show. Very much appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mary Lou.